What should be done to prevent accidental deaths involving Florida children? DCF speaks out just ahead. Good Thursday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app. Listen to us there anytime or on iTunes. We're also streaming live right now on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. And just ahead, keeping kids safe in Florida, as we speak with the new area director of the Department of Children and Families, Patricia Medlock. Get on the line now with your thoughts at 549-2937. Then later, it's technology to help the blind in Jacksonville interact with the world. We'll tell you about it. Plus, a special treat later on in the hour. Don't miss the live in-studio performance of Imagine John Lennon. All of that ahead. But first, this hour, changes to Florida's child welfare system are now law. After years of debate about the issue, the changes were prompted after a Miami Herald investigation into the Department of Children and Families a few years ago found that hundreds of kids had died on the state's watch after being left with known abusive guardians. The new law provides greater oversight into children who may be in abusive situations. Meanwhile, DCF has had new leadership in the area for a little while now, and child welfare officials are sounding the alarm about the greatest dangers to kids, particularly during the summer months. DCF's top official in Northeast Florida, Patricia Medlock, is here to provide us with an update and a warning to parents. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good to see you. And here's our question to callers. What are your questions for DCF when it comes to protecting kids from accidental deaths and deaths at the hands of abusers? We want your calls. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. You can also weigh in on our Facebook page where we are streaming this show live. We'll go to your comments there in just a moment. And so you've been on the job for some time now here in Northeast Florida. DCF, of course, has the awesome responsibility of protecting child welfare in the state. Let's begin with Duval County. What are you looking at in terms of the numbers?
Sure. So far this year, for 2017, we've had 28 child fatalities reported to us that are under investigation. So those are cases that meet the criteria for any type of alleged abuse and neglect. Mm-hmm. We know we've had 4 drownings, and that's the kind of the one we get hear a lot about on the news, and we want to make sure that we're reminding folks on safety and supervision to be extra vigilant when children are around water. And we know in Florida that is our top leading cause of death for the state.
It's drowning by a mile,
yes.
Isn't it?
Yes.
That is the most dangerous situation for children.
It is. It is. And there's so many things that we can do. You know, drowning situations, a lot of people think it can't happen to me. You know, we're safe in our homes. And that's where we see a lot of it happen, is you might be in your home, you might be come in for a break after swimming. And if you don't secure those doors or have some kind of alarm where if a child does go back out to that water, and that's what we see a lot is 2 and 3 year olds that, you know, you may think they don't know how to unlock the door, but they go right back out because they want to go to that pool and continue having fun while the family might be inside.
And it only takes a second
just
or two.
A second.
It's incredible. And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Northeast Florida DCF Chief Patricia Medlock. What are your questions about child safety in Florida? 549-2937. Okay, so drowning at the top, then SIDS, a sudden infant death syndrome. Unsafe sleep, crib death or smothering, maybe co-sleeping.
Yes.
And then, of course, hot cars is a big issue in Florida.
Absolutely, absolutely.
How concerned are you about that?
Very concerned. I think, you know, we see that there's so much out there to remind people, you know, to look in the back seats. But in our distracted society, we're just finding that people, if you switch up your routine at all, say the mom always takes the children, you know, and drops them off, and you switch that up a little bit, that's where we usually see something happen. Say the dad or the mom is doing that role. We always just please remember, put something in the back seat. When you have your child, put something important to you. So your cell phone, keep you off the phone, your briefcase, your, you know, something. People even say put a shoe in the back seat. So you have to look back there and just always look before you lock. Check it out. Make sure. That is just something that is completely preventable, and we can make sure we don't have that.
It seems incredible to me that people could forget to their child in the back seat, but they do.
They do.
How often are you seeing that?
I'm going to knock on wood. We have not seen one this year. We see it periodically. We had a few down in Volusia over the past couple years. We've had some out in the Circuit 3 and 8 area. What really frightens us is we're seeing a high incidence of the opiate epidemic, as you all have heard about. And we are seeing that parents are in cars using those drugs and found kind of sleeping. So we do want to make sure that we have everybody on the lookout. If they go to a store, if they see somebody in a car that's suspicious or they're concerned about, please make sure you're looking and make sure there's not a kid in the car.
So you're seeing situations where parents are using in the cars.
Yes.
Maybe they overdose in the car.
Yes.
And the child is left in the car.
Absolutely.
With the windows.
We've had several
with
of
the
those.
Windows up.
Yes. And we are able to get there in time. You know, vigilant citizens and police officers are out finding those, thank goodness.
And, you know, Patricia, that brings us to the discussion of DCF's oversight role in making sure children aren't being abused. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing in this area to make sure kids are in the care of appropriate people, and a little bit about how the new legislation, by the way, it was pushed through by St. Augustine State Rep. Cindy Stevenson.
Yes.
Putting more oversight into the state's ability to monitor children in abusive situations. Mm-hmm. Some years ago, DCF became a lightning rod for criticism after a Miami Herald investigation found hundreds of kids had died in the care of abusers that they hadn't been removed from those situations. Mm-hmm. So what's different today?
Okay. What I can tell you, our practice changed. The CPI, the Child Protective Investigation, that whole role kind of changed into more of a assessment type approach to a family. So we used to be a little more incident focused, so things were kind of separate. Now we do a full family assessment where the PIs are really looking at, and they're very well trained. I know a lot of times people think we're not. It is considered an entry level job. Paid at $39,000, but mm-hmm. It's such a crucial job. And we do everything we can to recruit social workers from our colleges. We work really closely with our local colleges, and they've been excellent helping us. They're even putting curriculum in around child welfare factors so that they can be more prepared. Mm-hmm. We train them. They go to training for about 10 to 12 weeks before they ever take any responsibility for a case. We provide them with ongoing training, supervision, and administrative overview. And then here in Jacksonville, I just have to brag a little bit on the system of care, because Jacksonville has a lot of providers that come to the table and help us provide that intervention for the families that they need to try to prevent that re-abuse situation from occurring. So we have family support services who do our ongoing services part of the case. They provide in-home, very intense services to those families to try everything we can to keep the family intact, because we can't forget about traumatizing the children for the removal as well. So it's a very delicate situation.
Right. And is the impetus still to keep the family together at all costs, or has that changed?
It's changed. I don't know if it was ever truly as a practice at all cost. What we tried to do is, can you safely serve the family in the home? So that's the decision that we make. We bring MDT teams together from multidisciplinary, all the subject matter experts from the field. The substance abuse, the domestic violence folks come in. Mental health is a big aspect of what we're doing right now, and trying to beef up our experience and our knowledge of that. We do not leave children in the home under egregious circumstances when a child has been severely hurt. Any kind of severe type neglect, we have to remove those. So if a child's in danger, we remove and we place into homes for their safety.
And if you're just tuning in, we'll go to your calls in a moment for Department of Children and Families Regional Chief Patricia Medlock. What are your questions and comments about how Florida protects its most vulnerable, its children? It's 549-2937 to join us. And here's a tweet for you from Brian regarding the child drownings in Florida. Discrimination in the past at public pools meant blacks were less likely to learn how to swim. Racism and segregation has played a role in child drowning deaths. How is DCF promoting swimming lessons for every kid?
Okay, that's a great question. And I have to say, perfect timing on the question, because the mayor of Jacksonville recently released some really great things. They had great partners, again, in Jacksonville. You know, this is a problem. It's absolutely correct. A lot of the public pools, we found when we really looked at it, they close a lot of the time. You know, they're closed often, so you don't have that opportunity. And then the funding was very limited to provide any kind of free swimming lessons. So you've seen our community answer that call. He has dedicated a lot of funding for that. The YMCA, I think, increased a lot of their opportunity. So I definitely think you're going to see that changing. And a lot of our public, you know, if you our services, so if you call 211, that's a great place to start to find out what is out there in your neighborhood. They can really hone into your zip code and find out and lead you to those places that might have some help.
Free lessons in some cases.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the lessons are out there, but often parents don't know how to access it.
Right.
And there are barriers. And, you know, it occurs to me, too, that DCF often comes in so late in the chain, so late in the process. You intervene after a lot of other things have happened that can put a child in harm's way. Here, and this, just to give people an idea of how difficult your job is, Florida has a big problem with the health and economic well-being of children. When you look at the statistics, we've got more than 40% of Florida children living in poverty, some in extreme poverty. Only 50% of kids aged 3 and 4 in this state attend a preschool. By the time they get to fourth grade, the majority are scoring at a below a proficient level in math and reading. All kinds of socioeconomic issues that can lead to abusive or neglectful, you know, situations for kids.
Yes.
And so you're coming in almost like the police are, trying to put out the fire after the fire is already raging.
Right.
It can be difficult.
It's extremely difficult. And I think it's a good reminder to people that you have to look, a lot of our situations are generational neglect and abuse situations. So changing, having a family agree and recognize that, hey, you know what, maybe I do need to change this and maybe I will receive help, because it's okay to say that and recognize it. And we are actually here to help. So I think a lot of times people think DCF is, like you say, you may only hear about it when it's a bad thing. But we provide a lot of assistance. We can connect to services. We have a lot of robust providers, like I said, that want to help heal families and move forward so we don't continue that path.
All right, let's go to your calls for DCF Chief Patricia Medlock. What are your questions for her about how the state protects its kids from neglect and abuse? 549-2937. Give us a call. Muriel is on the South Side. Hey, Muriel, good morning.
Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Sorry, that's Mario. But
Mario, sorry. Somebody misunderstood you there. Go ahead, Mario.
I was interested in finding out if DCF has had to increase or change the way that they do things with increase the focus on immigration, with now that JSO is focusing more on ICE and with families possibly being separated. Like the case that we heard yesterday, where children may be born here in the United States, American citizens, but their families are having legal issues, if they've had any, or what they're doing to help prevent families getting separated like that.
Right. Yeah. Thank you for that. That's an sort of a related issue involving child welfare. If a parent is deported by ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and the children are left behind. Mm-hmm. And we are seeing more of that under the Trump administration. How does DCF come in there?
We have not experienced a lot of that in our area so far. But what we would do is work with the federal folks, because usually they have the Health and Human Services has a program that they work. A lot of times we are called in to help if we have to emergency place while we try to find family or someone else that's here. That's how we would approach it, is we would just try to support the family, help the family. You know, we have very strict rules here. If we come across families, we work with families no matter what their status is. So as far as a DCF investigation, we would not be referring anyone to the law enforcement agencies.
Okay. So that's not at the top of your list. What else is? What else should people know that we haven't already talked about?
Well, I think in general, you kind of touched on this with, really, you had mentioned all the stats in Florida, and there's ways to change that. There's ways that we can look at, put children first. So when you're looking at any legislation, any rules, anything that you do, even down to code, because if code's changed a little bit in some of our communities, you might have safer waterways, safer pools. And I think just reminding people, you have to watch children and put them first. You know, leaving them home alone, you can't do that. I mean, they're going to get out. A lot of parents think that what we see a lot is neglect situations where you think, hey, my child's sleeping and I'm going to go to the store really quick. Well, I promise you, they're going to wake up and they're going to be scared and they're going to come looking for you. So I think if we just really change the way we approach how we treat children, and we need to put them above instead of kind of, you know, sometimes they're an afterthought in what we do. And just remind people that we do have resources. Please reach out. We have the education. That is such a huge indicator in reducing abuse and neglect in the future. If you can get that child on the right path early, and we have early start here, we have Head Start that are available.
Voluntary pre-K.
Absolutely. We have a lot of, you know, extended day even at schools. They're pretty, really, really reasonable, actually. And I know that the mayor also is going to try to extend that out with more funding to help families. You know, when you have your child in that educational setting and get them excited about that early, it really does change. It starts that change of making that, you know, safer. A lot of people don't know that, but education and health, providing them with great health opportunities, and, you know, there are opportunities here.
Thanks for joining us. We appreciate you being here.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us.
She's DCF Chief Patricia Medlock, and much more still ahead later. A live in studio performance by the musicians of Imagine, John Lennon. Also coming up, how the blind are able to see with a little help from technology. We'll explain. Back in a moment.
Next time on 1A, reality TV and reality. This year, The Bachelorette had its first black lead, Rachel Lindsay. There's very little that's real about reality shows, but they do reflect actual social issues like race and gender. Can these shows make a statement, or should they just stick to making money? Next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Tracy Long was always healthy until she had a birth control device implanted. Now she's going under the knife to get it out.
Because of these implants, I have to have invasive surgery and lose body organs.
And she's worried, what else could go wrong?
What if I never wake up from this? And really just the fear of the unknown.
On the next Reveal.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Calling all educators. WJCT and Community First Credit Union are proud to present the 5th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire. Saturday, September 16th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $30. Tickets purchased for the 2016 event will be honored. Share ideas with colleagues. Learn new ways to engage students and empower yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets now. WJCT.org/teach.
Many people in Jacksonville never come in contact with those outside their core communities. WJCT is embarking on a journey called Beyond the Core to start a citywide conversation about what unites the people who call Duval County home and what makes our smaller communities unique. We might have an upcoming Beyond the Core listening event in your neighborhood. Check WJCTnews.org to find out.
On the next Jazz Night in America, John Scofield presents music from his record Quiet and reunites with his Blue Matter Electric Fusion roots.
When we started to play, I did get chills from the songs and remembering all the good times we had, because the music reminds me of some real friends.
I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, there are an estimated 20 million blind and low vision people in the United States. And if you're one of them, chances are you've heard about IRA, the visual interpreter for the blind. IRA is a technology helping blind and low vision people interact with the world. It removes barriers and expands their possibilities to live with greater confidence and independence. Jacksonville resident Patrick Lane is a full-time agent for IRA, and his dad, Peter, is host of the popular Blind Abilities podcast. Here in studio, we welcome Patrick and Peter Lane. Hey, guys, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Good to see you both.
Good to see you as well.
And let's start with you, Patrick. You are an agent for IRA. Your dad, I'm assuming, takes advantage of IRA. We'll talk to Peter in a moment. What is IRA? How does it work?
IRA is an assistive or an informational tool, not an assistive tool. So IRA is a pair of smart glasses. We have a very high-tech sensors in them, a high-definition camera. And with that device, paired with our AT&T hotspot, AT&T is our big partner, and your app on your phone, you can press a button and you connect to a live agent that is anywhere around the country, and you can ask them anything, for assistance with anything you might need. So traveling, public transportation, finding ingredients for a recipe, you know, helping
You literally become the eyes for person using
it. We get a point of a first person point of view through their glasses, and we're able to assist with, I mean, you name it, and we've attempted it, and we probably successfully accomplished it as well. We've done some very amazing tasks, some big things, and, you know, down to the very simple everyday tasks, and it's been a life-changing experience for a lot of our users.
And I'm assuming for you, Peter, you're the co-host of Blind Abilities.
Yes.
How does, more about that in a moment. First, though, how does IRA help you?
IRA is a set of eyes. As Patrick said, there's no task too large or no task too small. And for any task that you can imagine that a blind person might find easier or quicker with eyes, then the IRA service will provide that. Actually, I've used it for a myriad of different types of tasks, ranging from reading my mail or business cards that I've gotten at conventions to performing household tasks, setting my thermostat at home, or navigating Disney World or a large convention that I attended a couple of weeks ago.
How does it work? Do you put on Google Glass and then they see what's right in front of you?
Yes, we have a pair of smart glasses, not necessarily Google Glass, but there is a high-tech video camera, and you put those on and you pair them with your telephone app, your iPhone, iOS, or Android app. And then you push a button on the phone and you connect within 10, 15 seconds to a live agent.
Less than 10 seconds.
Wow. And I'm assuming you got involved in this because of your dad.
Yes, I was lucky enough to hear the podcast that he did, his initial interview with our CEO, Suman. He had sent me the link to that. I said, check this out. And I listened to it and immediately knew that I had to be involved with that. I sent my resume in and I was, you know, hired within a day or two of speaking with them, and haven't looked back since. I was one of their original five or six agents. At this point, I'm actually an agent analyst. So I'm involved with a lot of the hiring and training of the new agents, because they all do go through an extensive amount of training and screening processes. So they're all very highly trained. And then we also do a lot of the reviewing and kind of upkeep with the agents, if you will, you know, make sure they continue their training. They provide a very high, you know, like a level of excellence that we expect out of our agents.
And it's worldwide now, isn't it?
Yeah, we are all over the world at this point. You know, we're providing data domestically through AT&T, but we don't ever want to stop. We want to help everybody throughout the world that's blind. So we have people in other countries absolutely using.
It's amazing what technology can do. And as I said, 20 million blind or low vision people in the U.S. Peter, your podcast, Blind Abilities, is a lifeline to many of them. Tell me about the podcast.
The podcast is We provide podcasts on a variety of topics, including technology. And technology, as you said, Melissa, is absolutely key to the success and independence of blind people in all over the world today. So we do feature demos and podcasts about new technology, iPhone technology. We have an individual series entitled iPhone 101 because there are so many citizens, seniors, transition students, transition aid students moving from high school to college, or even younger kids who are losing their vision and going through fear and anxiety of that's a very traumatic process. So what we try to do is...
Is that what happened to you?
Actually, yes. I had low vision from age 8 when I started losing my vision in grade school.
And what caused that?
They diagnosed it as macular degeneration, but since then it's become a lot more, and I'm probably 99% totally blind now.
And so with Ira, when that technology became available, what sort of difference did it make in your life?
It made things easier for me. Now, I'm in a fortunate situation in that I'm married and I have a sighted wife, and she provides all kinds of assistance and visual aid to me. But nonetheless, I was able to read mail. I didn't have to bother her for putting something in the microwave or setting the oven or walking around the block when we do our morning walks. If she's otherwise occupied, I can put on my glasses and go.
And Patrick, growing up with your dad, gave you, it sounds like, heightened sensitivity to the needs of people using this technology. So you're probably really good at it, I'm guessing, right?
He is excellent.
I've been told. Yeah, I've had a lot of practice, and if you want to call it practice, but just knowing what people need to know about, what's relevant information to them. And with that type of information, I'm able to relay that kind of training onto the rest of the agents as well.
And of course, I can't continue this discussion without mentioning that we have sensitivity to this here at WJCT, where we provide a free service to blind and visually impaired people. It's called our Radio Reading Service. The serene and majestic Michelle Corum, who is sitting across the studio from me right now, runs this service. And every day we have volunteers come into a special radio studio and read out loud the Florida Times Union and a lot of other publications. Blind and low vision people have a special HD radio that they have at home to hear this special channel so that they can read essentially through the agency of the Radio Reading Service. So just wanted to let everyone listening know that that service is a free service available. Just give us a call here at the station and we'll hook you up if you need it. Now, also happening this month in Jacksonville, the Blinded Veterans Association is having their convention. And on the phone right now with a little more about that, we welcome Executive Director Al Avina. Al, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And as we talk about this technology, Ira, and how it helps millions of blind and low vision people, some of them are veterans. Tell us a little bit about your group and what's going to be happening this month here in the city.
Well, absolutely. Well, we're about ready to celebrate more than 70 years since we started in 1945, a group of World War II blinded veterans that came together, about 100 of them, to advocate on their own behalf. And since then, we've been able to get the VA, the Department of Veterans Affairs, to create blind rehab services, which was then, in 1945, the innovator in expanding blind rehab services into the mainstream. And sharing those best practices with community-based programs that then took those best practices and then, of course, moved that forward. But with the advocacy and the direct service programs that we now provide more than 70 years later, some of the things that we concentrate on now is recognizing all the technology that's available out there and inviting a lot of the adaptive technology exhibitors to come and exhibit at our convention. Besides doing the regular business meetings that we have there, which determine the direction of the organization for that year, we have this giant expo, and we're expecting over 63 exhibitors this year that are very connected to veteran issues. Some of them are technology, some of them are services that the Department of Veterans Affairs provides to blind veterans, and some are other programs that are available to veterans that are out there. So it's a good opportunity to educate our membership. And we also open it up on Wednesday. So this Wednesday, the 16th, or next couple of Wednesdays from now, on the 16th, we open up the exhibition hall to the general public. So if the general public wants to come in and check out some of the latest technology that's available to individuals that are blind, they can also come in and see some of the latest things that we have available, not only to blind veterans, but also to some of the ones that are available to the blind community as a whole.
And this will be held where?
This is going to be held at the downtown Hyatt in Jacksonville.
Excellent. And that begins
on
the 16th.
Yes, we start the 15th and it runs through Friday the 18th.
Excellent. That's
Ira will be there as well, so come
I'm
check
sure
it out.
As will Blind Abilities.
So, definitely mark your calendar for that, and a fascinating discussion. Thanks so much, Patrick and Peter Lane, Al Avina with Blinded Veterans Association. Gentlemen, thanks for sharing all this. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
We'll be right back.
Unemployment is pretty low. Good for workers, not so good for employers.
Now we spend thousands of dollars in recruitment costs a month, and we can't find enough people to fill our interview sheets.
I'm Kai Risdahl, the full employment dilemma and the rest of the day's business news. Next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, it's a simple piece of advice for anyone who's struggled with their weight, and that's so many of us. Here it is. We are all born with an innate wisdom about how to eat right. But dieting leads us to disconnect from our intuition about food, and it leads to food obsession, hatred of our bodies, anxiety, and weight fluctuation. That's the message one local wellness coach and author delivers in her new book, and she's learned these lessons the hard way. Here with more, we welcome Cindy Landham, certified wellness coach and author of The Liberated Eater. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Melissa.
So you want to liberate us from dieting. That sounds good.
Yes, absolutely. And I dieted for 30 years, and it never worked.
You've tried them all.
Tried them
all. The grapefruit diet, the high protein diet,
the paleo diet.
I mean, the list goes on. And,
exactly.
You know, and fads come and go in dieting too.
Yes, they do.
So you rode those waves.
Rode them and about drowned in them.
Why is that?
Because diets simply can't work. They don't teach us how to live with food. They literally disconnect us from the inner wisdom we're all born with. So we end up actually, not only do they not work, but they actually do harm.
Why do you say that?
Well, because as we disconnect from our wisdom and start to chase other solutions, we get farther and farther from our ability to hear our own hunger, our own satisfaction, and we literally become disordered eaters. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot to overcome. And the longer we diet, the farther we get from really loving ourselves, knowing ourselves, and being able to connect with the wisdom we have.
What was the breakthrough for you to sort of change your mindset about all this?
I stumbled into what I'll call recovery accidentally. I had dieted for 30 years. I was sitting at my desk.
Were you overweight?
Well, here's my yes.
Okay.
But that really wasn't the torture. In the beginning, it was. I went to college weighing 124 pounds after dieting myself down to, you know, small. And within one quarter, weighed 165.
Mm.
Now, and maybe more.
Freshman 25.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. 40. Yes. And that was because I had left home, gotten out from under the thumb of the food police, and my eating was just out of control. And that pattern continued for 30 years.
For 30 years. And then you said, so you were sitting at your desk.
Yes, in my mid-40s, making yet another weight chart, no telling how many I had hung in the bathroom, and it was as though it was an epiphany. I had failed. I simply could not do this. Now, I didn't know there was another answer, so I felt that I had failed at dieting. I would give up, and I would just gain weight till I died, and that would be sad, but that was going to be my fate. I could not diet anymore. And the odd thing was that over the next few years, just giving up that thought of good food, bad food, fattening food, non-fattening food, it opened up space in my life to begin to actually be sane around food. It's the rule following of dieting that sends us into binging. Eating too little always eventually leads to eating too much, and it makes us a little crazy in the process.
Yeah, because you feel so denied things you love.
Yes.
Well, the trick, I think, for so many of us, and I know I struggle with this too, is moderation, not being too strict with ourselves, but not going overboard. How do you get to that? That's always been my struggle, because I'm either on the wagon or I'm off the wagon.
Yes.
But I need to find a happy medium, and I think that's what you're saying works.
Exactly. And to leave the idea of the wagon, because think what happens when we fall off. We say we've blown it, and then what do? We absolutely binge until we start the next diet. So this roller coaster, and there's plenty of data to back this up, most of us chronic dieters actually gain weight over the long haul instead of lose it. So the answer is for us to completely leave that paradigm of being on some kind of program, on the wagon or off the wagon, and instead become mindful, intuitive, informed eaters. So we're taking food off the big hairy deal list, and it's becoming a good gift.
How do you live that every day? How do you do it?
Well, a lifestyle change takes time. It's not like getting on a diet and getting off. It is. It takes support. It takes establishing new skills, just like riding a bicycle. The more you practice, the better you get. But over time, we lose that crazy feeling about food, and we begin to relax and to be able to eat reasonably. And it is a wonderful discovery. I work with people all the time who are very concerned with losing weight, and as they get to a more comfortable weight, the thing they say that is even more important to them is that they finally feel at peace in their mind.
Here's a tweet for you from Josh. What is the scientific basis you follow for abandoning diet rules?
Well, you know, the diet industry likes to keep this quiet, but there is just a mountain of research out there. You can read Triboli and Resch, who wrote Intuitive Eating back in the mid-90s. Michelle May, a physician from Phoenix. Dr. Ludwig from Boston University. I mean, it's endless. And not only biologically, but psychologically, that diets set us up for disordered eating.
And it's really psychological is what you're getting at, not the physiological changes that go on in the body.
Well,
you're really getting into the mind piece of this, it sounds like.
Yes, certainly the body is a part of this, but until we have a peaceful place between our ears, until we normalize our relationship with food, we're going to continue to act crazy with it. Mm-hmm. Undereat it, overeat it. It becomes our best friend and our biggest enemy at the same time, and that's a tough place to live.
Now, in your book, The Liberated Eater, you give the reader tools for what you call food encounters.
Yes.
Since we encounter food everywhere we go. So you have some tips and tools for people.
Exactly. So when we're dieting, we're following rules. And what do we do with rules? We break them. And the minute we break them, then we're binging. So we're going to leave those rules and begin to adopt wonderful tools. I think about every morning we talk about getting up and putting on our tool belt. And one example would be best bites first. Most of us chronic dieters save the best bite to last, which ensures, of course, that we're going to eat through everything, not listening to our satisfaction cue to get to the reward of that best bite. But just that one tool to sit down, look at your food, say to yourself, wow, what looks really best to me? And go for that best few bites first. It's so much easier to leave unwanted food behind when you've already had the best.
Hmm. That's a good tip. And there are more in Cindy's book. It's called The Liberated Eater. She's wellness coach, workshop leader, author, and speaker, Cindy Lantham. New to the area, by the way. And thanks for being here.
Oh, my privilege.
We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Chris Thiele. We have a good show coming up for you this weekend on A Prairie Home Companion, if I do say so myself, with music from The Shins and Miss Regina Spektor, plus the Royal Academy of Radio Actors will be there. That's Tim Russell, Serena Brooke, and Mr. Fred Newman, our first call radio players. There'll be a new song of the week and much, much more. Hope you'll join us.
Saturday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Find out what it was like to tour the Middle East a few months before war broke out in Syria.
Syria was a very welcoming place, and it was a tourist destination.
If you ever have trouble coming up with just the right word, consider some examples from other languages that you might add to your vocabulary.
English has borrowed a lot from all over the world.
And raise a toast to the good life in Bohemia.
Czech culture is about the beer.
On the next Travel with Rick Steves.
Saturday mornings at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Folk, blues, jazz, R&B, country, western, Americana. It's all acoustic and it's all in one place. And that one place is String Theory. And you can hear String Theory Friday nights at 11 p.m. only on 89.9 WJCT. String Theory, the very best of modern acoustic music. This and every Friday night at 11 p.m. on WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, Jacksonville production guru and lighting wizard Richard Borders, who has worked with some of the greatest names in rock, is producing a labor of love this Friday night with young folk sensation Madison Carr. Now, the project's called Imagine John Lennon, a magical mystery tour, and it features not only Madison Carr, but Len Johnston as Lennon. For a live musical performance, Imagine John Lennon, a magical mystery show, takes the stage tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m. at Mudville Grill. We've got a live in-studio preview right now as we welcome Madison Carr, and I think it's John Lennon, arisen from the dead, right here in the studio. Hey, guys, good morning.
Good morning. Truth be told, I've never left.
Good to see you. I'm a big Beatles fan, so this is exciting. Madison Carr, good morning to you, too.
Good morning.
All right, so this is a show featuring your talents, Madison, but also an homage to Lennon and the Beatles, correct?
Correct, yeah. It's basically, you know, I grew up listening to John Lennon, so this has been a dream come true for me. And I sing a song that I wrote to John Lennon about how he inspired me, and I imagine playing with John Lennon, and I'm lucky enough to have John Lennon appear, and we sing some Beatles songs and Lennon songs, but I also get to play some of my original music, so.
One song in particular?
Yes, it's one, actually five songs of mine, yeah.
But there's one in particular that you want to play later, it's called Screen, is that right?
Yeah, it's called Screen, it's about technology, basically.
All right. And that's one that I think people will love to hear. But they're also going to love to hear some really familiar songs that, of course, Lennon and McCartney made famous. So tell us a little bit about your part in all of
this. And some newer ones as well. A couple from my camp here. Fragmentation, which is about how society is falling for divide and conquer, being divided up by the banksters and those who are in power. You know, don't fall for divide and conquer. They've been doing it to everybody since the Indians. You know, hey, your brothers pray to the south and you pray to the north. What are you going to do? Here's some weapons. What are you going to do about it?
Mm-hmm. So all you need is love, right?
All you need is love is basically
right.
The answer. And
that's
we'll be doing
right.
That one as well. That'll be in the show.
Really? What all can we expect at the show? It sounds amazing. And a lot of talented musicians on stage with you guys, too.
Amazing, amazing people backing us up, really. And, you know, Beatle fans, come on out. It doesn't matter what the age. If you're young and you weren't around when the Beatles were there, if you were around when the Beatles were there, you'll enjoy it. Everybody will have a lot of fun because we're going to go through... You know, there's a limit to how much you can fit in two you know, how long is the show? Was it
about an hour and a half. We're
right.
cramming a lot in there, so.
Yeah. So we got a lot of things in there going all the way from, like, the beginning, the early days of I Want to Hold Your Hand, all the way to some of the solo Lennon set will be in there.
A little Double Fantasy, maybe?
We don't get quite that far.
Not
really.
That far.
We
Imagine.
Yeah, you know, we get to Imagine.
You get all the way up to Imagine. Okay.
Yeah, things like Give Me Some Truth, Working Class Hero, Imagine.
Give Peace a Chance.
Yeah.
Wow. Pretty exciting. Well, we're so pleased because right now we have a live in studio performance preview of Imagine John Lennon taking place tomorrow night at Mudville Grill. What are you guys going to play for us?
If I Fell. If you remember that, remember the black and white film, A Hard Day's Night. If I fell in love with you, would you promise to be true and help me understand? 'Cause I've been in love before and I found that love was more than just holding hands. If I give my heart to you, I must be sure from the very start that you will love me more than her. If I trust in you, oh please, don't run and hide if I love you too. Oh please, don't hurt my pride like her, 'cause I couldn't stand the pain, and I would be sad if our new love was in vain. So I hope you nice way to wake up and start your day, I think, you know. one of the oldies, you know.
I loved it. And you are absolutely uncanny.
Thank you.
Just uncanny. This is giving me chills. And if you're a Beatles fan, you need to come out to the Mudville Grill tomorrow night, 7:30 p.m. for Imagine John Lennon, a magical mystery show featuring Jacksonville's own Madison Carr and Len Johnston as John Lennon, of course, with an amazing backup band, some of the best musicians in the area, performing this special musical fantasy with audience participation, right? So
yes,
it'll be
audience participation.
Absolutely.
So, you know, especially for the Give Peace a Chance section, if you want to bring some percussion instruments or bring your good voice or whatever it is you'd like to bring and join in, it'll be just like the Bedin in Toronto, 1969. And, you know, radicals and everybody,
good
you're
times.
All welcome to come.
Good times. No Yoko Ono, though, coming
no,
out?
No,
okay.
No, no, we
all
didn't.
Right.
We didn't bring her along. And if, God forbid, you cannot come, we really would be very sad that you couldn't. But if you couldn't, you can catch me on the radio Thursday nights on OurGenerationRadio.com. And that's Len Johnston's Parallel Universe. And that's this evening, actually. It'll be on recording because I'm here, you know, But
you're here live and in the flesh.
Here live and in the flesh. And it's 7 p.m. Thursdays Eastern Time and 4 p.m. Pacific and midnight GMT.
Excellent. And go see this show tomorrow night. Sure to be a special treat at Mudville. Madison and John Lennon, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And that's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merchart. Michelle Corum runs the board during this show. Our theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Shevchik. Never miss a show, meanwhile. Just download the WJCT app and listen anytime. 1A's up next. The question, what would a popular health care plan look like? I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.